Welcome to Let's Talk Energy. This special series recorded at the Africa Energy Forum in Cape Town is brought to you in partnership with the Electricity Hub as we speak with industry leaders, key stakeholders and rising stars in Africa's energy sector.
The transition from coal to clean energy is one of the most pressing challenges and opportunities facing the African continent today. Historically, coal has provided affordable baseload power, but its long-term environmental and economic costs are increasingly unsustainable. In this episode of the Africa Energy Forum podcast, The Electricity Hub, we are delighted to be speaking to Harry Boyd Carpenter. He's the Managing Director of the Sustainable Infrastructure Group at the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development. That's a mouthful. To offer insights into how governments and investors can navigate the complex shift from coal to clean energy while ensuring that no one is left behind. Harry, welcome.
Thank you very much.
At this year's AEF, a clear spotlight on just energy transitions has really kind of rung through. This is the first day of the conference, and it's already come up in a number of discussions. From your global vantage point at EBRD, what is a practical coal to clean roadmap look like for African countries, especially those that are still in the early stage of the coal phase out, but are eager to scale to renewables?
Well, Larry, thank you very much for inviting me. And indeed, I've got quite a mouthful of a name and a title and an organization, but I'll try and make sense of this. So firstly, for EBRD, the organization I work for, the development bank I work for, this is an issue that we've been grappling with for 10, 15 years now, because our heartland is in Central Asia, Southeast Europe, and countries and regions which have a huge reliance on coal. If I think, for example, of the Balkans, where we've done a lot of work, you've got a region there which is 70% reliant on lignite. Ukraine, where we work, where is Central Asia. Again, these are countries with a lot of reliance on coal. So we've been grappling with this question for 10, 15 years or more. And now, as we expand from our existing operations in North Africa, we start working in certain sub-Saharan African countries, we hope to bring that experience.
Right.
So what does it look like? The first thing you have to acknowledge is it's really hard. You know, coal is the bedrock of certain countries' energy systems. And you're right that coal has at least appeared to provide affordable baseload power. Now, I think you're right also when you mentioned environmental and economic costs, because what we believe is that actually coal is not as affordable as it looks. It only looks affordable if you choose not to pay up front some of the very real costs it imposes. And some of that is around carbon. You know, carbon has a real, genuine social cost. But it's also around much more local issues like local air pollution, local water pollution, ash disposal, and then the sheer cost of remediating mines. So our first proposition is that coal is not actually affordable. The first step we encourage governments to take is to recognize the true costs of energy and the true costs of power. The second step, we think, is to recognize that there's an incredible opportunity for the world right now, which is in the extraordinary fall in cost of renewable energy.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last couple of years, also batteries. So what we would really say is set yourself a vision, set yourself a goal, which is to say the long-term direction is to an energy sector that is overwhelmingly reliant on renewable power. Why? Because that is the cheapest option available to you. Now, I can give you a very practical example. A few days ago, last week, we signed a 1 gigawatt project financing in Egypt, 1 gigawatt of solar power with a couple of hours of battery storage at a tariff, and that's a genuinely cost-reflective tariff, of under $3 per kilowatt hour. That gives you an illustration of just how competitive renewables and batteries have become. So we do think that there is truly a good story out there, which is to transition to renewable power, and you will have affordable power, you will have reliable power, because nobody disrupts the sun, nobody disrupts the wind.
That's right.
You can look at even the last few days, you look at the terrible events going on in the Middle East and you see the disruption that causes to oil and gas supplies and the anxiety and the volatility it will generate. But throughout that period, the price and the availability of sun and wind have remained completely unchanged. 100% available, 0% cost, and one of the few certainties in the world, is that those things are going to remain the same. Mm. You know, and I'm not very sure of much in the next year or 10 years or 20 right. years, but I am sure that the sun and the wind will remain completely available, and I'm sure that they will remain free. So there is an enormous opportunity there. And therefore, where does that take you in terms of a coal to energy, a coal to clean transition? We would say, especially for countries in Africa which have growing electricity demand,
mm-hmm.
don't focus so much on what you're going to close. Yes, in the long run, you need to move away from coal. But in the short run, you just have demand to meet. So focus on the positive side of the story, which is what you're going to build. And we would encourage an aggressive, massive build-out of renewable capacity.
It's a hell of a paradigm shift that you bring into the conversation when you talk about the true cost of coal.
Mm.
And you talk about the social cost. You talk about the broader cost over and above the wallet. And I think you're bringing it also with a space that is fairly nascent for a lot of African economies. Like, energy is still quite a new sector. We're still uncovering new economies. We're still sort of playing around to figure out what is the right blueprint for meaningful transition that doesn't leave anyone behind. And in a lot of that, we've seen a lot of interventions such as carbon pricing, fossil fuel subsidy reform coming in. What is your point of view of these tools in their role to accelerate the shift away from coal?
Well, we believe in them strongly. We think that you have the most efficient economy and the best outcomes for citizens if you have true prices. In other words, if you have economies which price the full costs and all the benefits of different activities or different fuel sources.
Right.
So in the long run, we believe strongly in the power of a carbon price to drive investment in decarbonization in the most efficient ways. And also we don't believe in subsidies. We think that fossil fuel subsidies are a bad idea. We think, by the way, that green subsidies are a bad idea. We think you might need them in a transitional phase.
Right.
But in the long run, we don't think that you should mm-hmm. subsidize green. We don't think you should subsidize anything. Now, that's easy to say, you know, it sounds like we recognize you can't get to that situation overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So we recognize, for example, that carbon pricing, you know, it's the right economic tool, but you can't just impose a carbon price at a meaningful level or a high level overnight. You have to work up to it. And so I think what we would advocate is we would say, set a long-term direction. Okay, say the goal for our economy, the goal for our energy sector is one where all the externalities are fully priced, and that will lead you inevitably to a largely renewable dominated system. That's our long-term goal. Nobody should be any doubt that's the direction of travel we're going in.
Right.
But in the short term, we're not going to let people get hurt. And you need to have protection. You need to accept that, you know, if electricity bills go up, the poorest consumers need to be protected.
Mm-hmm.
If old industries start to close, the communities and the workers that depend on those industries need support. So you absolutely need transitional support. And that's what makes a transition just. But you have to recognize it as a transition. You don't want to, you mustn't confuse people and pretend that this transition won't happen. Because in the long run, the laws of economics apply and they will work mm-hmm. out. And these and the old industries will not be sustainable. So it's that combination, a clear long-term vision, a short-term protection for people whose livelihoods or whose social standard, their standard of living is threatened by the costs of that transition.
And I guess that really is sort of the challenge that a lot of African leadership, yeah. African businesses, African investors kind of have to contend with, is that in a continent that has limited financial resources, how do you put together short-term interventions that are meaningful, that improve people's lives today without sacrificing that long-term view, which, you know, any transition strategy should always keep as the North Star. And I'm saying this because I think a follow-up conversation around the proliferation of renewable energy has been around what is the reliability challenge in a lot of African economies, where sure, we've got sun, we've got wind, we've got, you know, nature to work with, but the consistency of supply isn't always guaranteed. And so we end up deferring back to coal as sort of our base load power. So my question is, so how do you realistically manage this reliability challenge while still focusing on scaling up variable renewables?
Okay, I mean, so it's a great challenge, and I don't have a perfect answer. I mean, you know, there is no electricity system in the world that has solved this problem, right? Every electricity system you look at is grappling with it. I mean, you only have to look at what happened in Spain and the Iberian Peninsula a few weeks ago to see. Now, it's not clear at all, but that's the fault of renewables.
Right.
But what it does show you is that even a very modern, very sophisticated, well-developed system can collapse. And as I say, that's not necessarily to be blamed on renewables, but it shows you that all systems are vulnerable and all systems are struggling. I do think it's important, though, to keep a good news story here. Africa has enormous opportunity and enormous potential.
Mm.
You know, I'm British and I come from a country which is determined to go for renewable power. But because we're a quite small, cold, grey country... You probably know the sun doesn't shine that often in Britain. We're going to float turbines on the North Sea. You know, the bulk of our renewable power is going to come from taking a turbine and taking it out into the sea in a wet, salty, cold environment and floating it. That's pretty desperate. Africa doesn't need to do that.
It's determined, though. It's very determined.
Yeah, but it's also a bit desperate. You know, Africa doesn't need to do that. Africa has, you know, vast amounts of space, a lot of sun, a lot of wind. In certain countries, a huge amount of geothermal power, hydropower potential. Yeah. So, you know, the superpower, the economic superpowers of the future will depend heavily on clean energy. And that does give Africa an enormous advantage. And people shouldn't lose sight of that. Transitions are hard. Transitions are costly. Transitions can have losers if you don't design them properly.
That's right.
But this is a transition to a really great opportunity. But how do you keep the system reliable? Well, you know, the energy systems of the world are learning that all the time. And if you look at Europe or the US, you can see that actually you can get to very high levels of penetration with the right design, with a high level of battery, a high level of battery penetration, a high level of interconnection. I think that's really crucial. You know, you can't have each country on its own trying to solve this problem. You need to think as a region or even as a continent. But you can solve those problems. And, you know, for example, if you look at California, at certain times of day now in the evening, 30% of California's power is coming from batteries, which are releasing the energy they stored during the day, solar energy they stored during the day. So there are solutions. It's technically perfectly feasible. Denmark is another example. Denmark is a country that can meet 100% of its power from wind. It can do that partly because it relies on its neighbors and it gets support from the German system, from the Scandinavian hydropower system. So this is doable. Okay. But sure, in the meantime, well, that's partly an answer to your coal question. One of the things we always point out about coal is that megawatts of coal is not a problem. It's megawatt hours of coal that generate the problem. So maybe you need to keep a certain amount of coal on the system, but just generate less and less and less with it.
Right.
But provide that essential system stability and security when the renewables can't deliver it. So again, long term, the answer is renewables and a whole set of things that go with that, interconnection, hydropower, batteries. You can get to an essentially clean energy system while built upon renewables. And in the short term, yeah, that's probably the role for coal and potentially even gas, right, providing that essential backup.
You know, I want to put a pin on something that you've touched on in so many words, but I think the lesson, especially for a lot of emerging economies, is the idea of learning and continuously learning, building systems that continuously learn, which speaks to agility, which speaks to paying attention, but it also speaks to collaboration, partnership, etc. And I think for this sector on the continent, it's absolutely critical to be so open to picking up insights and applying them meaningfully into our own systems. And in that spirit of learning, there's clearly a number of aspects that a lot of governments overlook when they plan a just transition for coal regions. Could you kind of walk us through a bit of what you've seen, any specific case studies perhaps that could be interesting around the most overlooked aspects when governments plan a just transition around coal?
Well, so firstly, I think I mean, all governments need to learn. I think African governments are no worse off than any other government.
Right.
I mean, yeah. You know, again, I come from a country which experienced its own transition from coal. I mean, the UK stopped generating electricity from coal in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was growing up at school, we were getting 70 to 80% of our electricity from coal. And we did not manage the transition well. You know, there are parts of my country which are socially scarred by that transition. So,
Right. You
know, no government has a monopoly on getting this right. I think the hardest challenge is how to help communities find different ways of living. And I think probably one mistake that governments need to be careful not to make is thinking that a community dependent on coal energy should move to dependency, to economic dependency on another form of energy. Because renewables is a different type of business. It's often in a different location and mm-hmm. requires different skills.
Right.
So I think, you know, one of the countries that where we're working most intensively on a just transition is North Macedonia. It's a small country in the Balkans, but it's got a very strong commitment to moving out of coal, which currently provides the bulk of its electricity supply. Mm-hmm. And there, what we've done is worked with the government to put in place credit lines targeted at the areas which are most dependent on coal, and where the financing comes with specific forms of support to help people start new businesses. So I think that's the sort of thing you need to do. You need to identify clearly which are the areas that have the high levels of dependency on the coal sector.
Right.
And then you need to be very open to all forms of different economic activity. So it might be that community, you don't want to fall into the fallacy of thinking, okay, everybody who's a coal miner will now become a wind turbine technician. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
You know? Location is wrong, skills are wrong. But it might well be that they shift to different types of light manufacturing or tourism or agritourism or agri-photovoltaics or something like that. But
you need to be
broadly imaginative about the types of economic opportunity. And then, as I say, you need to provide the financial support to facilitate that.
I mean, the pivoting that is required within communities to shift beyond just the energy use itself, but I think skills, people's affinity to pick up new experiences, etc. It's a bit of a paradigm shift in a way, isn't it?
It's a huge shift. So look, we're going through an energy revolution,
right?
But actually, if you look back, you know, human society has moved through multiple energy revolutions. You know,
it's true, actually, yeah.
You know, I live in London, and in the 19th century, London was dominated by horses. You know, the major environmental problem in London was what to do with all the horse manure. And now we don't have that problem. Instead, we have what do we do about nitrous oxide from cars? And we're going to solve that by moving to electric cars.
Right.
And human society will go through, inevitably, another energy revolution. So it will happen. The question is, how do you manage the transitional cost? But one answer is plan early and get started. Mm. Because the faster you go, the harder it is. Or at least the faster you close things without planning, the harder it is. So, you know, the sooner governments think about it and start working on it, the more gentle the transition can be.
And it's so, I really love that you're giving this broad national goal type examples with very meaningful sort of community-based examples where you speak about some local communities in the UK that were scarred by the shift and then some that, you know, were well prepared and better prepared to take it on and pivot accordingly. And I think the renewable energy revolution is, in Africa especially, has that work to do to hold on to national ambitions without leaving behind communities, without leaving behind the grandmother in the rural area and ensuring that whatever that shift is, that she is part of it as well. There's a number of African countries that are quite decisive about shifting from coal to clean energy over the next 5 to 10 years. Very decisive. It is part of their plans, and they're putting their money where their mouths are. What do you recommend be their top three priorities to ensure momentum, investor confidence, and long-term impact?
Ooh, top three. I mean, poor governments. I mean, all governments end up having about 100 priorities. If I could only do three things as a government, number one, I would set an overarching policy goal, and I would make it very clear what the direction of travel is, and I would communicate that that is a fundamentally positive direction. You know, Africa has an enormous amount to gain from the renewable revolution. As I said, you know, the energy world of the future is built on wind and sun, and then a number of other supporting technologies. But fundamentally, it's a windy, sunny future. A windy, sunny continent is a great place to be in that future. So don't forget that. Paint that picture. Tell that story. Number two, I would build your grid. The renewables will come. And the private sector has proven again and again that given the right circumstances, it can deliver very fast, with great innovation, and with very affordable prices. You know, I mentioned this project that we just financed in Egypt. I mean, that's the private sector ruthlessly driving down cost with innovation, with competition. But if it doesn't have a grid to connect to, and the grid is fundamentally a public sector asset, then its development will be slowed down. So I think number two, invest in the grid. If you have scarce public money, put it into the grid. And then number three, it's, you know, don't leave people behind. Design social support programs, elicit international support, but make sure that you bring everybody with you, because if you leave people behind, then you will lose that social license to deliver.
That's right. That's right.
Easily said. Not so easy to do.
But possible.
Yeah, and also unavoidable. You know, we know that this is what the future looks like. We know where we have to get to. So I think, more than possible, unavoidable.
Thank you for your time this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Let's Talk Energy at the Africa Energy Forum in partnership with the Electricity Herb. Tune in every week for a new episode featuring voices driving Africa's energy transition.